Happy holidays, campers. It's getting pretty close to that time of the year where the weather starts to get a bit colder and the stores start to get a little bit more packed. And then, you know, hopefully you have an endless supply of goodies and food waiting for you to eat. So with all that said, I'd like to wish you all a safe and happy holidays. And of course, to thank you all for listening or starting to listen to Campfire Adventures. I'm your host, Dylan, and I'm here with a new story, and I'm excited to share it with you all. So I did also want to let you know one more thing. It's that I plan to celebrate Christmas this year with some creepy Christmas stories. And by that, I mean maybe tell more Christmas-themed cryptid stories. Does that make sense?
Do you have any idea of who you might speak of?
They are surprises. And I don't want to give any of them away, but kind of like how we did Krampus last year for Christmas, yeah. I want to do like stories like that for every single week. So it'd be super cool. And also there might be a new postcard coming. Maybe, possibly. There's been some talks about that, but I get it. We haven't even finished Thanksgiving yet. So I'll leave the Christmas talk for next week. And I'd like to thank you all again for listening. I'm chilling around the OG campfire because I missed it. And then the boys and Patrice are here as my live audience because they're excited to hear a new story. And it's
a new story.
Oh boy, podcasts.
We love podcasts.
And this one's actually, it's really interesting. So I think with all that said, it's time for us to grab our drinks. I got my Fat Tuesday drink and we're chilling around the campfire. And it's time for us to get into this week's story. For this week's episode, I figured it might be pretty cool to find a story involving Thanksgiving, at least in some way. And maybe there's like, I don't know, a Thanksgiving monster or urban legend involving ghosts from Thanksgiving's past.
A giant turkey?
That's what I was thinking. But what I was able to actually find were a lot of myths about how turkey doesn't actually really make you fall asleep after you eat it. And other myths about how pilgrims actually didn't have buckles on their shoes.
Really?
Okay, that one's a lie. I just made that one up because I thought it'd be hilarious to be like, what? My life's been a lie. But, I mean, that's what I kept finding was stuff like that. And so I was on this search. I was like, there has to be some kind of Thanksgiving myth or legend or something. And then I ended up finding something that involved Thanksgiving. It involved ghosts, true crime, and a search for truth. So I was like, that fits the bill for one of our podcast episodes. And that's the story that I'm going to tell you today. So picture it. The Watson family was having one of their annual Thanksgiving feasts in Pennsylvania. And you know how after everyone kind of eats, they start to zone out, watching some football and just chilling and hanging out, right? Well, at least that's just what I'm going to assume is happening right now at this time of their annual dinner. But so there were two brothers of the Watson family, and their names were William and Frank. And they would sit around their grandpa, Grandpa Joseph F. Trusisian, and he would tell them stories about the old days, as they do. And they sat around and they listened to the same story every year about how while he worked for the Pennsylvania Railroad Company, it's in an area known as Duffy Cut. But
I was going to say Pennsylvania.
No. He and the other locals would see ghosts of deceased railroad workers.
Ooh.
And so he told them this story year after year, every Thanksgiving, about this. Like, oh, back in my day, blah, 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 blah. And the kids, I mean, at least for me, if I was thinking, like, I would instantly be interested. Because, I mean, ghosts, I mean, that's crazy. But if I had to hear the same story every year, I'd be like, okay, Grandpa, the ghosts, they're scary.
Say, how many times is it going to be interesting?
Yeah. But, like I said, this wasn't just a tale that was told by Grandpa Joseph. Everybody in the area would tell tales of an unknown past that plagued the Duffy Cut area of Pennsylvania. And now, as a reminder, there are spirits that roam the land from this unknown past, right? That's what Grandpa Joseph's talking about. So time passes and both William and Frank move on with their lives. William becomes a university history professor at Immaculata University in Pennsylvania. And Frank, he became a historian and a minister out in New Jersey.
Huh.
New Jersey. So anyway, the year's now 2000. And the two are living their lives. And unfortunately, as time goes on, Grandpa Joseph passes away. And the story that he told just still held on to the boys. I mean, they heard it every year. I couldn't imagine, like, when you think about your grandpa, you wouldn't think about that story, right? So one day, while in his office, William claimed to see some lights off in the distance. They were, quote, as he said, it looked like neon lights in the shape of men. And he kind of thought that someone was doing, like, an art project or something like that. So they kind of, him and his coworker were looking at it, but they didn't put too much stock into it. So it wasn't until about 2 years later, in 2002, when he went to visit his brother, Frank, and the two were looking through their storage. And he found some old files that once belonged to their grandfather. So the two start to read through these files, and they learn about how back in the early 1900s, a man named Martin Clement, who became president of the Pennsylvania Railroad, was documenting accounts of a shocking event that happened in the 1800s.
A giant turkey.
In these files, let me tell you, there's stories about railroad workers that were murdered. They were buried, and this is all written about in those files. And there were accounts of people who were seeing ghosts, the ghosts of these workers, and they documented it. And if you're wondering where this all took place, these sightings and these alleged murders, it all happened near Immaculata University. Hmm. That's, you remember the place, that's where William works?
Yeah.
And this is all in Duffy Cut, like that part of Pennsylvania, where the railroad is. So, isn't that pretty crazy?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
So William and Frank, they keep digging into these files, and they read about how Martin actually wanted justice for these deceased railroad workers. And actually, he had a stone monument that was built near the railroad tracks, like where he found like all this evidence proving that there was railroad workers that were killed.
Right.
And so he's like, well, at least the least we could do is build a little monument, right? And so he was on track, and he was set for this story to, like, hit the papers, hit the press. But the Pennsylvania Railroad Company didn't want that to happen, so they covered up the story. However, these files still existed, hence how we have all this information. Now, cut to 1919, and Grandpa Joseph, he started to work at the railroad company, right? The same one that Martin's now the president of. And one day, you know, Martin, he used to not let anyone touch these files. They were his keepsake. He already fought for justice. He got denied. So he didn't want anyone else to touch them. But he had to trust somebody. So Grandpa Joseph became his secretary at some point. And he decided to entrust the files to him. And while Grandpa Joseph was reading over these files, because it was my understanding from what I read that a lot of it was like slang and like Irish, you know, translation kind of thing. So he was just trying to like bring it back into the 1900s, because it's all from the 1800s. So he's like annotating and commentating about like what possibly could have happened. And it's just crazy to me that at the end of the day, like after he did all his annotations and citations and summaries, it would be his grandkids that would actually have the files and like read it back, you know, because this all leads back to his story. So the annotations express all the events that had transpired during this event back in the 1800s, about there being a mass murder, about how people covered up the story, and also how locals saw these blue floating neon-like spirits in the area, just like William saw, right? And so they don't know everything that's happening. They're just reading this right now. They have the story, they have the sight of the neon lights that William saw, and now they're just reading these files that are like adding more to it. So when he's reading about these spirits, it's like everything that the grandpa was telling them, they weren't just stories, but they actually were events that happened. And they were written about it, so they had proof about that to back up the claims. The only thing they needed now is the physical evidence. Because it's like building up more and more and more.
Yeah.
So being historians and having connections, they were able to assemble a team of people who are willing to do anything to find the truth. And you know how they always say, like, truth comes out in the light kind of thing? Mm-hmm. Like, whatever you put away was going to come out? Right. Well, what they uncovered, it's unbelievable. So here's what happened. So this is a story within a story, and it's all documented in these hidden files that they found in storage. The year was 1832, and at the time, there were plans to build a new train transportation system that'd be able to get people across all of Pennsylvania, right? Connected to different states and whatnot, do whatever. So the railroad company, they hired a man named Philip Duffy, and he was an Irish contractor, and he was tasked to get a crew and build the railroad throughout the state. And back in the day, we didn't have, the technology or the machines and everything that we have now to make doing something like this easier. So they relied on cheap manual labor. It was a resource that was always in high demand, and they needed it to be able to create the railway that is now known as SEPTA R5, also known as the Main Line out in Pennsylvania. So one of the biggest problem areas with this railroad construction site was a valley area that is now known as Duffy Cut. Right? And so the lead contractor, Philip Duffy, last name Duffy, space now is known as Duffy Cut, right? So just so there's that connection there, because I know I didn't go there, but I was wondering maybe if people were getting that. So the contractor, Philip Duffy, he was in search for cheap labor to get the job done because he was already hired, he had these plans, and it was going to be a big job. And at the same time, when all this is happening, he has to assemble a team. There is a ship that is known as the John Stamp, and it was full of Irish immigrants. It was coming from Ireland all the way out here. It took some time, obviously, to sail across, and it was planned to be there at the same time. So it was like perfect timing, right? So Philip just decided that he'd wait for the arrival of the ship and attempt to round up some of the people because he knew that they would be looking for work and they would be willing to work whatever. They made it to America. The goal was to find the American dream, and you get offered a job right when you get off the ship. Sounds great, right? But they're also immigrants, right? And do you know anything about history and immigrants?
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay.
Okay, so the goal was to get people to want to work for him, right? So about 100 people and passengers were aboard the John Stamp. And 57 of those men who were on there, they agreed to work for Philip. And at the time, racism against the Irish was huge.
Yeah, they definitely did not like the Irish in those times.
So what do you know about that?
I'm not really sure why it is. I don't know if it's because they're cheap labor and, they took our jobs or.
I feel like that was basically one of the main reasons
I kind of
because,
think so too.
I mean, obviously you're coming here, you're looking for a job, someone offers you a job, and that's what a lot of the people in the town didn't like. They were like, okay, these people are going to come here. Like, if nobody came here, maybe we could offer more money to do the job. But they're willing to do it a fraction of the cost. Philip needed people that were willing to work endlessly for little money.
Yeah, and the Irish definitely wouldn't have been up to it.
I mean, wouldn't have been up to it. Like, if you were coming from nothing and you were trying to get
Oh,
something,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
anybody would have been up to it. So it was just a huge problem. And it's also believed that at the time, people thought that Irish people were bringing the cholera epidemic over here to the United States. Do you know what that is?
I do not know.
Okay, we've talked about it before, but I get it. If you're like me and you still don't know what it is, it's basically a bacterial disease that causes massive amounts of diarrhea and extreme dehydration. So over time, if it's not treated, you die from it. And basically how you get it is by eating like contaminated water or food. Typical Irishman's dilemma. Do I eat the potato now or wait for it to ferment and drink it later? That was not meant to be shade to anybody. I'm gonna leave that in because it's from Archer, and Mallory Archer is hilarious. So watch Archer if you haven't watched it. I think that's like the first couple seasons. But so yeah, there was a huge issue with people being racist towards the Irish. I'm sure at the same time, so many other different immigrants, but the story is about Irish people. And then also at the same time, there was this disease that was attacking people in the US. It was cholera. People were dying. And actually, we'll get into it a little bit later, but what the real reason might have been. So Philip had these new Irish railroad workers, and he had them living like in an outside area in this town that was less than desirable. In one of the articles, they called it a shanty town. So what it, like to me, like when I think of shanty, like I think of like
The old pirate
but pirates the
songs.
songs, yeah. But it's basically like an
It's
area
like a
that's,
tent town.
yeah, basically it's just inhabitable. And it was sad, to like read that, like, you got here, you got a job, and then they're like, we got a place for you to live. And you're
Perfect.
like, dang, wow, America's great. And then you get there and you're like, this is disgusting.
This is way better than my old place.
But it just wasn't habitable. The conditions were terrible. It's surrounded by all the people who are already against Irish immigrants. And it just was a terrible time if we think about it, and like a sad time to reflect on because this is American history. But we also have to, you know, understand our history, because I feel like it's important. That way we don't repeat it, and that way we learn from it. And I mean, hopefully we've grown a lot more. I feel like we have more. But anyway, that's not this podcast. That's a different type of podcast that you're going to listen to. So we're going to keep moving on. We know what's, well, I feel like we know the mistakes of the past. And so anyway, so these guys, they all agreed to work on the railroad construction. And they had their new living quarters, which was Scheiße. That's German, not Irish. So it didn't take long for cholera to actually start infecting the newly hired railroad workers. And eventually, the town was quarantined, and no one was able to leave. Oh, shoot. Like, it was just that bad. It was a small area, but they were like, you all stay here, sickies, right? So it was about 3 weeks after the Irish immigrants arrived that none of the 57 men who were hired by Philip were ever seen again.
Oh, shoot.
It only took 3 weeks. They weren't working on the railroads. Their families hadn't heard anything from them. They just disappeared. So if we flash forward to the year 2009, and the Watson brothers, they have all this information that they had in 2002, they started an expedition to look in the Duffy Cut area for any type of truth and physical evidence to prove that this actually happened. Because if it did, this is a big mass murder to take place, you know, in Pennsylvania and in the United States, and a huge cover-up from a railroad company. So they're looking for evidence, and I think in 2000, like in the mid-2000s, they kind of found, like, some artifacts that Irish people, you know, people from Ireland would have brought over at the time. So it was like, okay, well, there's something here, right? But it wasn't until 2009 that they actually found some bones. They found hundreds of bones, actually. And some of those specimens that they found, it had evidence that people suffered from blunt force trauma, which is different than people dying of being sick, right? So it alluded to the idea that people were actually being
beaten to death,
hurt, or, you know, murdered. So what they were able to deduce was that after some of the 57 men got sick, they were all quarantined. And if they tried to leave the area, they were attacked and eventually murdered. I mean, that is unless the whole group was just attacked by the people who hated them anyway. Mm. Like, imagine being sick. Like, you're already the immigrant that nobody wants around. They already think that you brought the disease over. And then you're sick. And you're like, that's just it. How dare you? You know? So we're not sure if the whole group was just taken out by these, you know, surrounding villagers. But the one thing that is officially known is that the men were buried in Duffy Cut. And they were left to be forgotten by the railroad that they were hired to build. So with so many answers rising from the Watson brothers' discoveries, there were still so many unanswered questions. Like, why did Philip never say anything? And he, like, all these accounts were there. And then what did the Pennsylvania Railroad do, or what were they thinking when they thought it was a good idea to cover it up, right? And I think one more thing that I was reading about was that the cholera that was infecting everybody was actually coming down from the waterways connected to Canada.
Oh.
It wasn't through the Irish immigrants.
It was Canadian.
It was allegedly. That's what I was reading. I was like, because it's through infected water, you know, and if you're already in like a shanty town, like the only thing you have to do is drink river water. I mean, the odds of being infected, oh my gosh, could you think about it?
Not by that, by something else.
So, exactly. So the bodies that were found by the Watson brothers and their crew, they were actually all reburied. And they had a special burial for all the 57 men who were hired to build that railroad. And it's the same railroad that for over 200 years hid a dark secret from the world. Nobody would have ever known. Like, you know, you're jumping on the train to get to your job and you just realize you're driving over 57 bodies. So there's still so much more going on to get justice for these 57 men. But it's just crazy how one story turned into all of this.
Oh.
You know, and with that said, I mean, this is the end of the story that I have for you today. It's just a crazy twist because the stories, you know, it shows a dark past that people just tried to hide and thought would never come out. I mean, everybody almost died.
Yeah.
Except for one grandpa, you know. Like, they all deserved justice and everything. But it just seemed like the ghosts of the workers, you know, that had lost their lives, they tried to tell the truth by being there. How many people saw, like, these blue lights dancing around, you know, something? And then Martin and Grandpa Joseph, they tried to get the truth out there. You know, Martin went and made that stone monument. You can still see it. You can see it on the side of the train when you're driving by.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'll post pictures so people can see it. It's not the biggest thing in the world, but it was there. And at least it was kind of some justification and, you know, validation that they were there. But that was trying to be done. And it all led to the grandpa just telling his stories to his grandchildren and them actually listening. Yeah. Like, a story grew into the truth, which grew into evidence, which grew into a special burial for everyone. So, stories are powerful things. And, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. But if there's a story being told and just one little bit of that thing is true, something must have happened, right? And I feel like we find that so true with this story here.
Yeah, so definitely we do.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
I want to know what that Duffy's Cut is looks like now. Is it like pretty rural, so they are able to find stuff, or if it's like a city now, so it's like hard?
Well, so the college, right? The university works at is right here. Oh, and then there's the railroad tracks, right? And then around there, there's also kind of like still forest. So when they were digging up one of the bodies, they actually had to remove a tree. But they had to do it carefully because the tree, like when they were pulling up the roots, there were body parts like in the freaking roots.
Cool.
So the tree was growing off the bodies of the people. So they were able to excavate it. And it just took, that's why it took so many years, because they started their search in 2003. They didn't find proof until about 2005 or 6-ish. And they didn't find bones and like body parts really until 2009. So I think it's just something that's going to keep happening. It's just crazy because they just, you know, that was the valley. And it just seemed like they threw all the bodies there and then just covered it because they were trying to fill it anyway.
Yeah, so, it was the valley. Why not?
I mean, it's a good way to cover it up, but it's just no way to handle, you know, any type of situation that doesn't seem like it fits in whatever. And that, folks, is the end of our story. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. I know it wasn't definitely the family celebrating Thanksgiving moment, but it also is a moment for reflecting on the past, learning from it, listening when stories are being told, because there's a reason why a story is being told. And also that 200 years or 20 days, whatever, justice is important. And they got it. I am so glad that they're getting it. So it's nice. And they were able to actually identify some of the bodies based off of the ship records and based off of dental records and stuff. So they were still able to like put tombstones down and stuff like that. But
very cool.
So it's a cool story. And I guess with that said, this is wrapping up my birthday month too. So just to share a little bit of the last couple adventures, we did have a great birthday celebration where we went with the family to Dave and Buster's and we went to Boomer's and had a good time. We did the 2-part Loch Ness Monster episodes, which was super cool to do. Never done that. I kind of thought they'd be longer, but I feel like I enjoyed them enough, you know? And then after that, we went to go see Keith Sweat. Ooh, yeah, baby. It was so good. I'm going to post videos of him singing on our Instagram. And then we went again a little bit. Didn't win anything, but that's fine.
Didn't come home broke either, though.
Yeah. And then after that, I took a quick trip to Vegas, which is where you saw those aliens that I posted about, because I always stop in Baker's to go to the little alien shop. And I got some alien jerky.
Yeah.
We went and did karaoke, so you'll see me and my crew, which was Marquesa, Caden, and my little sis, Ray, which are all suspects from our other episodes. So you will see them and see pictures of our adventures. And with this one, we're around the OG campfire because it's a moment and I needed to come back here. So I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed sharing the story. You will see all of our source material and pictures of as much stuff as I can show you on the website at www.campfireadventurespodcast.com. You will also see our behind the scenes, the Key Sweat videos, the Vegas videos, pictures of the birthdays and whatever else on our Instagram and Facebook at Campfire Adventures Podcasts. And with that said, every noise you heard is because we're outside. There was a little dog barking who wouldn't stop. And I'm going to say good night or good morning. So whether you listen to this in the morning or the evening, hope you have a good morning or a good evening. All right. Bye.
Bye.